everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy John Couch, John engineering and producing our program. And together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this Monday. Wow, where did September go? September 28th already? 2020, bringing Southern Arizonans together right here on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. Worldwide live listening on our website, buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. It's time for our Monday political face-off. Our commentators today, John Munger, is seated to my right, well-known Tucson attorney, former president of the Arizona Board of Regents, Republican candidate for Arizona governor, and Jeff Rogers, also a well-known Tucson attorney, former chairman of the Pima County Democratic Party. The Monday political face-off sponsored by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. I'm so proud of their new website. It looks so good. That's moesgallery.com, and they've got just really, they're into the e-commerce. It's really newly redesigned. I've even got, they've even kind enough to put up the Bill Buckmaster collection of antique prints and maps. A lot of people doing Zoom these days. One of those prints or maps would look great over your right or left shoulder as you do your Zoom conferencing. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lawton Dodge, and of course, moesgallery.com. Jeff, how was your weekend?
Very nice. Still hot.
Mornings are cooling down a little bit.
Oh, they're lovely.
We had 60, about 68 in the backyard this morning.
But the one thing we haven't really talked a lot about is how little rain we've had over the last 3 months.
One of the second driest right now summer rainy season ever.
Yeah.
When was the driest?
1926, and just
a long time ago.
Yeah, I think it was a shade drier than this. So what makes this different, John and Jeff? It's been the hottest summer on record here. So we are in a severe drought. This part of Arizona, it's been a really, really tough year. No rain in the forecast, and we get this persistent high pressure that just hangs on and really makes it very difficult for any kind of rainy activity to come in. But hopefully we'll continue to get some cooler mornings this week. Jeff and John, the big story, big political story, well, there are two, the debates tomorrow night. Everybody looking forward to that. Before we get to the debates, Jeff Rogers, the President Trump paid no income tax for much of the past two decades, according to the New York Times. Does anyone care other than perhaps the Democrats and maybe some independents?
I think you're going to find that a lot of people care, and this is a story that's going to have legs. We've known he's been trying to hide these income taxes for years, but now we know that 11 of the 18 past years that they looked at, he paid no income tax whatsoever, and we know that in 2016 and 2017, he paid $750 total each of those years. And, I mean, that's, you know, if you're making minimum wage as a single earner, and you have no children and no deductions of any kind, you're going to pay more tax than the president paid if you're just making minimum wage. And so that's, you know, that's pretty shocking. And I think Americans are all pretty shocked. And I think when you start digging deeper in them, you see that, you know, not only has he mischaracterized himself as this financial genius and real estate genius, but he's a horrible complete failure. And he was bailed out once by his father's wealth of about $500 million. But we're now seeing that the Apprentice television show, he made almost $500 million off of that. And like some foolish child, he basically started buying up all of these trophy golf courses, which have shown nothing but losses as far as the eye can see in both the past and present and future. So this man is not only not a genius financially and real estate-wise, but he's an absolute failure who's managed to keep himself one step ahead of the banks and the IRS. And now we can see how desperate he is to hold on to his job because, you know, when you start looking very closely at these tax forms, you know, this is a man who really is probably going to get indicted within 90 days of leaving the presidency.
John, how concerned are you about this report?
I'm not very concerned at all. I think people don't care what Donald Trump did before he was elected president, number one, which is what this is about, except for the year 2017. Number two, people understand that he, as Jeff said, okay, in business you have money-making years and you have non-money-making years. Jeff just declared that Trump's a loser and he doesn't make any money. Well, then why is Jeff upset that he didn't pay any income tax? If you're not making any money, why would you pay any income tax? Third, what people don't understand is how business operates. You don't always operate, you don't always make money by cash flow income. Sometimes you make money by accumulating property. Even though that property doesn't make any current income, it appreciates. Meanwhile, you get deductions. They're all legal deductions. You get deductions for depreciation and other things, and those go against what income you do have. So it's all legal. You are entitled under the tax law to take these tax deductions, and you may or may not make money in the process each year, but your assets are accumulating over a period of years, and then you can sell those assets and make money on them, and then you have a big turnaround in income for some particular year. Well, he hasn't been selling property. He's been buying properties. And so naturally, his cash flow may be short. He's got depreciation. He's got all of those things that happen. They're all legal deductions. His cash flow may be short. I don't know. But he's got assets that he can borrow against. The way a lot of these real estate developers make money, they don't make cash. They appreciate value of the property, and they borrow against that. Well, that... they sustain themselves by borrowing. That's not taxable income.
So you're saying he was cash poor, but...
He may be. I don't know. I'm not saying he was cash poor.
Okay.
Wouldn't surprise me. A lot of developers are cash poor, but they've got assets that are appreciating in value, and they borrow against that appreciation and maintain their lavish lifestyles. So what?
Okay, Jeff.
Well, the question is whether it's legal or not.
Well, let's talk about what presents a clear and present danger to the national security of this nation. And that is that these forms that the New York Times uncovered show that he owes $421 million in debt that is due within the next 4 years. Now, we don't know who he owes that to, but most speculation has centered on Deutsche Bank, which is rumored to be controlled, and a lot of the assets that they gain are from Russian oligarchs. So the fact is that where is he going to come up with $421 million, we're talking $500 million over the next 4 years. And what kind of risk does that mean for America when we know that many of these loans are probably to people in other countries, as well as maybe even Russian oligarchs? On top of that, he's got a $72 million disputed tax refund that it looks like is he's probably going to have to pay back, and with penalties and interest, that's another $100 million that he's on going to have to pay during the same probable 4 year period.
He's on the hook for how much then?
$100 million. Well, he's $421 million in debt on all of these properties,
and that
indebtedness is due within the next 4 years. Some of it due right around the corner after the first of the year.
And on top of that,
he's got another $70 million that he's probably going to owe the IRS plus tax penalties and interest, which will take that over another $100 million.
Yeah, but
this is a man who presents a danger
to
America.
My response to that is, so what? If a guy owes $100 or $10,000, that's a big debt for some people. If they don't have assets that they can sell off worth $10,000, or they can't refinance, then they're in trouble. But if they've got $1 billion worth of assets, what difference does it make what their debt is? This guy has billions of dollars of assets.
That's not what the New York Times article show.
Wait a minute.
In fact, he's not even a billionaire like he claimed he was all of the time.
Jeff, let me finish. The problem is people don't know all the details of his business, and therefore, all of these are conspiracy theories. Well, he may owe debt to the Russian oligarchs. That's all a guess. This is all a guess on the Democrats' part. Who does he? Okay, he owes debt to some banks. We don't even know what banks he owes. A lot of people, virtually half of the population, have debt to people. I have debt. I'd wager Jeff has debt. You probably have some debt.
Actually,
Bill.
I don't have any debt.
We don't know all of the benefits or problems that he's got. This is all a conspiracy. Let's let the facts show up. One thing the New York Times article did say is that he does in fact have this audit pending. What the numbers are that the IRS is trying to get $100 billion from him, and he's got a countersuit trying to get $72 billion in refunds from them. Now, if he's trying to get $72 million back from them, and he only owes $100 million, obviously he's paid some taxes, and he's entitled to a refund.
Actually, it's the other way around.
No.
He took a refund of $72 million that the IRS is now saying he was not entitled to, and they want it back plus penalties and interest, and that's where the $100 million
whatever
figure
the,
comes from.
They want $100 million, and he wants a $72 million. You can't take a $72 million refund, which they gave him, incidentally, and you can't do that unless you've paid that much in taxes. The IRS isn't going to give me a refund for $72 million just because I asked for it. There had to be some income to take that against.
Okay, we're going to take our break right here. It's the Monday Political Face-Off. John Munger and Jeff Rogers, stick around for segment number two. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and DodgeMoesGallery.com, our signature sponsor of the Monday Political Face-Off and the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is in the process of developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, and soon will consider which projects best address transportation needs across the greater Tucson region. As part of its ongoing public outreach, the RTA invites your early input on which projects meet regional goals. Learn more about plan development and provide input at rtanext.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Welcome back. It is the Monday Political Face-Off on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, the Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our signature sponsor for the Face-Off, of course, is Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Stop by or check them out online. They're located at Fort Lowell and Dodge, and their newly redesigned website looking real good at moesgallery.com. Seated to my left, Jeff Rogers. To my right, John Munger. John, of course, tomorrow is the first of the three debates. How important is debate number one compared to two and three?
Well, historically, number one has been the least important of two or three debates. The gaffes and errors and the gotchas have occurred in the second and third debates.
Hillary kind of won the first one.
Well, she did her best. I don't think she won anything.
Okay.
But she did her best debate in the first debate. Mm-hmm. She did her worst in the third debate. And the second debate was also against her. So the first debate, yeah, it's important. It's very important. I like the six issues that Chris Wallace laid out that are going to be debated. He's got six issues, including national security, environment,
law and order,
taxes, law and order, coronavirus, mm-hmm. those types of things. And I think we're going to hear two of those in each debate, two of those issues taken. It's an hour and a half with no breaks for commercials. So it's going to be a full opportunity for the candidates to express their policy views. And it's not going to be BS. You're going to hear these candidates getting into the issues, and that's what we need to hear. We need to hear the policy debates, and I'm confident that Chris Wallace will keep it focused on the policy debates. Now, there will be some going back and forth between the candidates and some cheap shots and otherwise and shots at each other, but it's going to be principally focused on the debates, on the policy issues. And that's why people should listen to this. There's going to be not much room for your standard political posturing.
And we'll be carrying it right here on KVOI. We'll have it here on the radio for you on 10:30 The Voice. Jeff Rogers, a lot of the experts that I've been looking at and been commenting on say Biden has to kind of stand up to Donald Trump in this debate situation.
Well, I'm not sure if stand up.
Stand
to him.
Up, or maybe think, maybe a better word, come on strong. To
I think
him.
He just needs to look presidential because that's something President Trump can't do, and so if he can just look presidential in his presentation, then I think he will have led the day. I mean, I think this is probably the most unpredictable debate that we've ever seen in the
world. I agree with
this
that.
This one coming up because, you know, Trump has taken his lumps over the last 3 weeks. I mean, he has gotten clobbered in tons and tons of ways. And I look for him to come out kind of like a cornered animal. I think he's just got so much, you know, anger and so much hatred in him that I just look for him to come out like a cornered animal. And if I were his advisors, I would be doing everything I could to short of giving him Valium to calm him down and make sure that he tries to look dignified and presidential, because I think that's really what his goal is. If I'm advising him,
what, to tamper down an angry look?
Yeah, kind of? That's to really look dignified and presidential. What he needs to do, and that's a difficult proposition.
I think he's going to look just fine. He's going to do just fine. Trump is an expert at this. Biden should be after 47 years. I mean, Trump has an excellent position that he's done more for this country in fulfilling his promises in 47 months than Biden has done in 47 years. I mean, Biden's claiming all of these problems out there. Well, he's been in office for 47 years. What the hell has he been doing if we still have all these problems?
Well, I think what we've seen is we're complaining about the 3.5 years President Trump has been president.
No, you're not.
And divided this nation more than it's ever been divided since the Civil War.
You're focused on racial issues that have been in existence for a century and a half or more. And what the hell has Biden done about it? Donald Trump has lowered black and Hispanic unemployment to new unemployment lows. More blacks and more Hispanics have jobs in this country than ever before. Let me give you another number that's interesting. During the period that both Bush the second and Obama were in office, the average income for the worker rose $3,000. Under Trump, that was in 16 years. In Trump, in 3 years, 4 years now, it's gone up by double that, by $6,000 per family. Now, where the hell was Biden all this time? He, in 47 years, left the working person with inequality of income, didn't do anything for him, and in 4 years, Trump has doubled what both Bush the second and Obama did in 16 years.
So, except all those people are out of work now and earning nothing.
You're saying he's the pocketbook candidate.
He's the working man's candidate.
He inherited an economic revival that was started by Joe Biden and President Obama, and it continued throughout most of his watch until he foolishly lied to the American people about the coronavirus and the economic
that so-called economic
was
revival
caused by him.
Let me remind
that's not an economic revival.
This economic revival that Obama Biden so-called did was the American economy was at zero, basically. And they took it to where they improved from zero. Isn't that very nice? But it was the worst recessionary recovery in 8 years. They had the worst recovery from a recession ever had by a president ever in American history. Yes, it improved. It improved from zero.
It improved from the worst economy since the Great Depression to a booming economy.
No,
that was
it
inherited
wasn't, Jeff. It
by,
wasn't.
By Donald
it wasn't
Trump.
Booming.
And then he finally trashed it when he lied to the American public about the coronavirus.
No,
and it's not coming back.
Let me give you the real coronavirus numbers. We have a mortality rate that is
the highest in the world.
No, it is not.
We have 4% of the world's population, and we have 25% of the deaths.
We have a lower mortality rate than Europe does in the United States.
So I think our mortality rate is just under 3%.
Yeah.
Something like that.
It's now down to that.
But we have
the largest number of people killed by the virus in the world.
Okay.
We've had 200,000 people die out of 330 million people.
But I think it is, John, just under 3%.
It isn't. 200,000 is not 3% of 330 million people.
I think what Bill's talking about is the percentage of people who die from the virus.
And the people who get the virus who die is lower in the U.S. than it is in Europe.
No, it's not, John.
Yes, it is.
Right,
look
guys,
at the numbers.
It's in the world.
Talk with Will Hummel, who's already humble on the line about COVID-19 in a minute. But, John, you think there's maybe, what, is 10 to 13% undecided coming into the debates?
My numbers that I'm getting, Jeff has said 6 to 7%. Mm-hmm. What I'm getting is 11 to 13% are undecided. One thing that's very clear here is Jeff's people are going to vote for Biden.
Right.
my people are going to vote for Trump.
Right.
Then that's roughly 30-35% of the population each. Mm-hmm. Then you've got everybody else, and of the everybody else, it accounts for about 10% of the country, and that is enough to turn the election in wherever we go. Now, let's remind us
quickly,
of one thing.
Please, John.
Not getting caught up in the popular vote. You could have 100% of Californians and New Yorkers vote for Trump or vote for Biden. I don't care. This is an electoral election where both popular vote and state votes count It's an electoral election.
Jeff, it's about, what do you think?
I think so. Biden's polling at or close to 50% in most states that he expects to win.
Is Trump.
Got to go. The Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lawn Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. Check out Moe's for all of your great framing needs. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. I think everybody had the same thought. It's getting cooler, at least the mornings, and it's time to head to Green Things. They had a great weekend as people thought, well, this is the time. Let's do some planting. This is a perfect time, actually, to get in your fall color for the backyard garden. The 13-acre site, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Everything you could possibly imagine for your garden is available at Green Things, and also some fabulous merchandise, most of it hand-carved, as at Zocalo Village, which is also part of the Green Things complex. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line. Will Humble is with us. Will is the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. 30 years in public health. He's been at it a long time, including some really top positions, including director at the Arizona Department of Health Services. He was the agency director there from 2009 to 2015. He joins us now on the live line. Will, how are you?
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for the invitation.
How did that road trip go for you? Weren't you on the road for almost 2 or 3 weeks?
Yeah, we rented an RV. My family and I went, first we drove to Iowa, then Minnesota, across to Montana, and then back down south. So my one piece of advice for all you listeners that want to do this is make sure you rent a new one.
Yes, a new one, right? Not a used
Not
RV.
Rattle trap. I think I have hearing loss.
Oh, my goodness. And, Will, I'm curious, what was the mask controversy? Did it vary, obviously, I guess, from location to location?
Oh, yeah. So in Iowa, I got to tell you, it looked totally pre-pandemic. I was in Fort Dodge. That's in the center part of the state. And then later, Okoboji Lake. It's up in the northwest corner there. Hardly anybody had a face covering at all. We went to Minneapolis, and it was like here, you know, where it was pretty, you would expect to see masks on everybody. We drove across South Dakota, and it was, nobody had a mask on in South Dakota. And by the way, they're among the highest states in terms of spread right now. But then, interestingly, Montana was, except in the really rural places that we went, Montana was, people had face coverings on, and they have a statewide mandate. Governor Bullock is their governor, and they've got a statewide mandate. So, like you said, it depended on where we were.
We had a little bit of controversy here. You might have heard part of it. I know you were on hold before coming on during our Monday political face-off. Does the United States have the highest death rate from coronavirus in the world?
No, that would be Belgium.
Wow. Okay. Who would have thought?
Yeah, Belgium has the highest. And one of the things that happened in Belgium is that they really did we did not do a very good job of protecting people in assisted living and skilled nursing facilities, but Belgium did an even worse job. So it depends. And, you know, from the very beginning, we knew that this virus is far more lethal in people that are older than younger people. And so I think what you'll see in the end when this is all finished and we do the more in-depth analysis of the epidemiology, we'll see that the countries, well, and the states too, that did a better job protecting people in care homes will have done a much better job in terms of keeping down the mortality rate within their state or country.
Most of the new confirmed cases are going up at a pretty good rate right now around the United States. Arizona, which earlier this summer, Will, saw a very dangerous spike in transmission, now reports a 7-day average of new cases that is 40% lower than the previous period. What is your assessment of where the Grand Canyon state is right now, 6 months in, or 6.5 months into this coronavirus?
Yeah, the key decisions that helped bring the number of cases down in Arizona were, A, when the governor allowed the cities and counties to put in a face covering ordinance, That was, I think that was June 20th when he did that. About a week later, he shut the bars and the nightclubs for about 6 to 7 weeks, I think. That was another important development. And then now they've got those two interventions right there allowed us to get a better handle on the virus. But also, I think we talked about this last month, that, you know, we had such a bad June and July that many, many, many people got infected. And so we're benefiting from some level of herd immunity. It's probably somewhere in the range of, you know, 12, 15, 17%, but that helps. The more people that are infected, the more challenging it is for the virus to find a new host. So I think those are the three things. And as you mentioned, we're in decent shape right now. There's a few zip codes around Arizona that are bad right now, mostly around the universities. But also there's some spread in Gila County, Coconino County. So by and large, we're doing okay. But as we have seen, this thing can get out of control quickly. And so I hope our elected officials, the governor and Dr. Crist, are keeping a close eye on the dashboard so that we can move quickly if we need to prevent what we had in June and July, where it was just uncontrolled growth.
You know, we keep hearing, Will Humble, about second waves and further, you know, maybe even a third wave. But then again, we're told don't compare coronavirus to an influenza. It's a different situation. However, we keep hearing we're going to have coronavirus with this second wave. Is it possible, Will, that we may not have a second wave, that it's basically still one giant wave that is being mitigated in some places better than others?
Yeah, well, here's what I would say. In Arizona, we've already had two waves.
Okay.
First wave was that was the March and April wave, which got under control with the stay-at-home order. Remember, things got actually pretty good up until right before Memorial Day. Then we had our second wave, which was much, much worse. That was June and July. We've recovered from that by and large. And so the question then remains, what happens from here? Do we have another big run-up in cases later on in the year? And there's no answer to that question because it depends on the policy decisions that get made. You know, you can't say what's going to happen or what's not going to happen without knowing in advance what decisions governors and appointees are going to make with respect to interventions, what decisions universities are going to make when it comes to in-person instruction, what decisions cities make in terms of rolling back their face covering ordinances the way Scottsdale did last week. Now, Maricopa County still has their face covering ordinance in place. And so one of the things we know about this virus, it is very sensitive to policy decisions. And so we are not at the mercy of this virus. I've heard people say that, even people that I respect. That's not true. We're at the mercy of the decisions that our elected officials are making.
You know, and before we take the break, speaking of masks, I thought this was very interesting, an interesting idea, and it is unproven. It was described in a commentary published last week in the New England Journal of Medicine that masks may act as kind of a facial coverings can spark a protective immune response. I guess the idea, Will, is that you get a little bit of the virus. Everybody's wearing masks, presumably, but you're still getting a little bit of the virus.
Well, I've got to tell you, I know what article you're talking about, and I would like to see some additional evidence before I would draw conclusions that article is accurate. I'm not ready to buy into that yet. I have bought in totally to the idea that face coverings are the single most effective tool that we have. And by the way, the cheapest tool that we have, that's been well established. There's a systematic review that was published in Lancet. So that's a study of studies. And of course, the National Academy of Sciences report that came out in late May and then reproduced in early June. But I'm not ready to buy into that argument yet. I'd like to see somebody else do a little bit more in-depth review on that.
All right, 790-2040, 790-2040. We're going to go ahead and open up our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Will Humble sticks around for our segment number four on the Monday edition of the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Any questions for Will? 790-2040. Be right back. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for the draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this Monday afternoon in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. The Buckmaster Show, this portion presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. It's time to start thinking about visiting Silver City. So when the land of enchantment, New Mexico, is once again ready to welcome out-of-state visitors, you'll be ready for that three-hour road trip to a beautiful area of the southwestern United States. For more things to do, places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. Let's go back now on the Buckmaster Show live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, to Will Humble, the Director of Marketing and Public Relations and Executive Director of the Arizona Public Health Association. Will is the former head of the Arizona Health Department. Let's leave COVID-19 for just a moment, Will. We have an item coming up on the ballot dealing with recreational marijuana. What is your position, sir?
So we're not taking actually a position on Prop 207, the Arizona Public Health Association. And we put a statement into the voter's guide. You might be able to see that. And we put the same statement in both the for and in the against side. And the reason we did that is because, in our opinion, there are both advantages. So there's good things in Prop 207, but there's also things that are potentially harmful. Let me talk about the things that are potentially harmful. First, number one, we've seen in other states that have had a retail marijuana initiative that it increases access for adolescents. And that is not a good thing because marijuana use is harmful to adolescents in particular. Also, there's a higher risk of impaired driving because marijuana would become more available to everybody, including adults that drive. And finally, we see an increase in emergency department visits, not from the marijuana smoking, but from the edibles. So on the risk side, those are the primary risks. However, we do definitely see benefits to Prop 207, and in that, which is basically the criminal justice reform elements of the law. So persons that have been convicted of possession of less than 1 ounce of marijuana historically are able, if it passes, to go into the justice system and get the courts to expunge that previous conviction. That's helpful to that person's ability to support his or her family. One of the key ways that you're able to support your family is by having a decent job. And if you've got a previous felony conviction, and even one joint is a felony in Arizona, which I totally think is inappropriate, but it is. One joint's a felony, and so you get a felony conviction, it hurts your ability to make a living for the rest of your life. And so the criminal justice reform piece that would legalize possession of 1 ounce or less, I think is helpful in that it removes that felony punishment for possession of less than 1 ounce. For more than 1 ounce, it would remain the law as it is. And so we see both public health risks and benefits. And really, it's in the eye of the beholder and the voter whether they believe that the benefits of the criminal justice reform part of it is outweighs, the risks of, increased use by adolescents.
Medicinal marijuana really started to take off under your watch. At least when I say take off, there was so much emphasis on it. Has it generally been a success, Will Humble?
Well, I think it's been both a success. And it's also been, in some ways, not a success. On the success side, the people that do and can benefit from marijuana are able to access it now. That was a voter initiative that the voters approved back in 2010 and that we implemented when I was in that director job in 2011 and 2012. And the program continues today. So people who do benefit from marijuana use for their medical conditions are able to get it now. So in that sense, it's a success. In other ways, it has not been as successful because it's just a fact that there are many, many, many medical marijuana patients who don't have any medical condition at all, that they have the cards because they want protection from the law, from the possession laws. Like I said, one joint's a felony in Arizona. There's only two other states that are like that. Including Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is still a felony. It's been successful for many, many people, but there are recreational users in the system. And when I was in that state health department chair, we did the very best we could to build regulations to make it as medical as possible. But the structure of the language that the voters approved back in 2010 really cast the die and made it basically impossible to have a purely medical program, but we did the best that we could to keep it as medical as we could.
Think it's going to be a very close vote?
I think so, yeah.
I want to go back now to the COVID-19, and let's go back 6 months to when COVID really came onto the scene in a big way, and of course it's changed all of our lives. There was the emphasis of flattening the curve, and flattening the curve would mean keeping hospitals free as much availability as possible for COVID patients. We've done that very well. The emphasis still is on cases. And do you think that is just perhaps kind of for the news people, it's kind of an easy way to track this thing? Or are we putting too much emphasis, Will, on cases?
Well, let me go back to something earlier that you said, that we did a fairly good job of flattening the curve. I would argue we did a poor job of that.
Okay.
I mean, there are many people that died unnecessarily in June and July because our hospitals were at or above capacity. And remember, the state health director had to authorize crisis standards of care back in July. And that was because our hospitals were overwhelmed. So I want to put that to rest. I don't think we did a very good job of flattening the curve in June and July. Since then, things have gotten better. As I mentioned, the mask mandate, mandates, plural, has been helpful. And so now we're in a position where the hospital capacity, at least right now, is okay. And so you have to look at some key metrics to keep your eye on the dashboard so that you're able to implement control measures before things get out of control. And so the key things to look at are basically the elements that you see in the school in-person opening guidelines. You look at different, you look at trends. So that would be number of new cases using a seven-day moving average, and look at the trend of that. Percent positivity is a key element, and then the number of cases per 100,000. So I think you have to look at all three metrics, just like when you're driving a car. You need your speedometer, you need to look at your gas, you need to look at your oil pressure. You know, there's a number of things that you need to keep an eye on to make sure that your car is running well. And the same thing goes for this pandemic. It's not, there's no single measure that tells you everything, but collectively, when you look at them together, it can give you enough information to make responsible decisions before we end up like what happened in July, where we were at crisis standards of care within the hospital system in our state.
You're having a lot of folks my age, over 65, who are looking to take a flu shot. Some people have told me they've never taken one before. They are this year. It's being reflected, believe me, at least here in the Tucson area, the particular vaccine called Fluzone, which is a bigger dose for older folks. There have been some kind of spotty shortages. So, Will, this tells me that that's a good thing, that we can get a lot of people, at least older people, vaccinated.
Yeah, it's the number one thing that we can do every year to prevent people from getting overcome by the influenza virus, which is, it doesn't get as much press as COVID-19, but it can be very deadly, especially to older folks. And so we're fortunate that we have an effective vaccine, actually plural, different vaccines. And as you mentioned, there are some that are specifically designed for folks in our age group. I'm over 60 as well, so that we get some of that extra protection. It's still late September, so there's still time. And if you go to your pharmacy or your primary care office or community health center, and they're, talk to them about what vaccine is best for you, and definitely take advantage of it. We're very lucky that we have such an effective tool.
All right, Will Humble, thank you very much. We'll catch up with you in a month or so. Thanks, Will.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Will Humble, the former director of the Arizona State Health Department, the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, and our guests appear on the live line, like Mr. Humble, on the live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show, Monday week, kicking things off. On behalf of John Couch, Engineering and Producing, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon, everybody.